So we were way off base, right? Because we hadn't surveyed the audience. So what once we'd surveyed the audience, then it was like, oh, okay, that's the language patterns we need to use. And then we can pass that on to the sales team and they can start using those language patterns. We can pass it on to the media buyers. So this conversational commerce where we're having that human interaction and building a feedback loop that then generally then can create more sales at every stage of the buying journey.
You're listening to the Merged Marketing Podcast with me, Jason Hunt. The mission with this show is to discuss all things marketing, sales, and mindset. It's my hope for entrepreneurs like you to get the most from your efforts so that you can focus on what you do best. Let's go. Hey, podcast listeners. This is episode 118 of the Merged Marketing Podcast. And the topic of today's episode is how to leverage conversational commerce. For those out there wondering, what is conversational commerce? Well, according to Google, conversational commerce is the practice of using social interaction to sell products or services, such as chatbots and voice assistants. Well, today my guest on the show is Paul Ace, and he is the king of conversational commerce. Paul is the CEO of Amplify CCom, who helps seven-figure high-ticket course creators break through their glass ceiling to generate an extra 6 to 7 figures in new revenue using conversational commerce. You're going to want to check out this entire episode as there is a lot of tidbits of information that's going to help benefit you as well as potentially your business within the next year. So without further ado, here's my chat with Paul Ace. You are listening to the Merged Marketing Podcast. This is episode 118 and right there is Paul Ace. And today's topic is how to generate an extra 6 to 7 figures using conversational commerce. Interesting topic. We have not discussed conversational commerce on the show before, so I'm excited to get into this one. But first and foremost, Paul, how did you become the CEO of Amplify CCom and who do you help?
we could go for the long version or the short version. So I'll do the short one for the sake of time. I went from selling sausage rolls to wedding singing to selling bridesmaids dresses to becoming a owner of a digital marketing agency. Along the road, I learned things about marketing when I started being a wedding singer. And then I was like, do you know what? I enjoy this part more than the actual singing. And I realized once I ended the singing business, I had no business, right? So I sold it for $2,000 for the speakers. I bought myself a new bathroom for the house. And that was all my business was worth after 4 years of work. And I thought, that's not the way I want to build things. So I was like, let's build something that works beyond me and I can actually take myself out of the business one point and really push that forward. So that's how I got to where I am right now. And who do we help? We help seven-figure course creators who want to scale up, who right now maybe they've hit a glass ceiling and they're just like, you know, this is getting hard either bandwidth-wise or it's getting hard in terms of scaling profitably. So we come in and we help them with the AOV and the LTV and understand what the lifetime customer value is of every single person coming in the funnel and help them break through that glass ceiling without hiring a massive internal marketing team or having to train them internally.
Very cool. I'm quite shocked. You were a wedding singer and 4 years at kicking it as a wedding singer. And you're just like, hey, that's enough. I've had enough. I got to move on. Was it through that experience where you kind of had sort of an epiphany to go down this route that you've went down today?
Well, the bridge in between that is as I was doing the wedding singing, I was like, I need to get some extra leads for the wedding singing, right? So I decided I'm going to create an info product. I'd read the old expert secrets and .com secrets and stuff. And that's kind of a little bit how I got into the online marketing world at the time. And I was like, I'll create this info product. And it was like a £12.95. So it worked out about $15 for this Dream Wedding Secrets box. So it was like all the things that you need to plan your wedding and everything. It had one of my CDs in there, vouchers and everything, so on and so forth. That then turned into a completely separate business. We sold like 250 of these boxes, which at the time was kind of crazy for me when I was doing like, 20 weddings or something a year and I'm sold 250 things online. And then that actually built a Facebook group of 3,000 brides. And then we did the whole ask them what they want and give it to them. So we did this a survey in the group and they said, we want bridesmaids dresses at a reasonable price. So that's what we did. And we spent, yeah, almost 2 years. That part of the business, I think we spent about 7-8 months building that business up, and we got up to 16,000 a month after like 3 or 4 months. And it just started to balloon. And then I didn't work out my returns policy properly. And then it all went from phew to poo, right? It all went crashing down. And I remember I got postmanophobia. And people are like, well, what's postmanophobia? I never heard of that before. So I was scared of the postman, the mailman coming up in the morning. So every time, you know, they get those little scanners and they beep the parcel. Every time you beep the parcel, it was like, that's £250 coming back. Beep, £250. Beep, £250. So basically my heart would sink every single morning as it would come up, because I knew, hey, that was more money that was coming out of my bank account that I couldn't afford to pay. So at that point, I had to make that pivot and go, what am I good at and what do I enjoy? And that was the marketing side. And then I got to where we are today and realized actually works really well in the online course space.
That's amazing. That's awesome. It's awesome to hear that as well, Paul. I come from similar beginnings where I was on a stage singing to people. And then from there, now I just lecture people on marketing stuff, but it's still kind of a lot of synergy there still coming from that background of getting on stages and performing for people, which is quite interesting. And here we are in a podcast today, right?
I love it. Karaoke night next week.
That's it. Awesome. I love it. Karaoke rock stars now, right? Yeah. Cool. So today's topic, conversational commerce. For our listeners out there, define conversational commerce. What is it?
Yeah, so conversational commerce is a 80% human-like experience and 20% human experience. So that means, how do we start to ingrain things in the conversation by using the customer's language patterns, sometimes also integrating, and when I don't like the word bots, right? It's not kind of like just AI bots recognizing responses and putting replies. It's where we start the conversation with automation, written in a way that a human would write it, rather than like we're making a sales pitch. And then we hand over to humans at the right time in the process to actually continue that conversation. So for example, we had a client that we found, they were doing a live challenge. And when they got to day 4 of the challenge, we found that their lifetime customer value almost doubled. So we're like, right, we need to get them to day 4. How do we get them to day 4 and make sure they consume day 4? So we came up with this essentially accountability system where we created this human-like experience where they were following up with them each morning of the challenge, like that accountability. And then they could actually respond in real time. And we built the human element to it as well, where they had scripts and templates, but also they could put their own spin on it. So it always felt right, rather than this kind of automated bot that it comes back and then it's not really the right response. So it's kind of, you know, then we taught those breakthrough buddies how to use a customer's language patterns and repeat that back to them to then close those sales. So we were closing $5,000 sales over SMS using that process. So that's in a nutshell is what conversational commerce is. And it's understanding the customer's language patterns and the psychology behind it, and using the combination of human-like and human customer experience.
That specific client that you talk about, where they increased their customer life value by 4x. Can you explain that? Dive into that a bit. Like, can you give us like a kind of a tangible example of how that process worked for them?
Yeah. So that was one of those situations, right? When you're looking at lifetime customer value, a lot of people just go, well, what's the overall lifetime customer value? So they'll take all the revenue that they made and divide it by the number of customers. And that's essentially, they go, that's a lifetime customer value and that's it. What we do is we tag everything, absolutely everything at every stage of the journey. So we'll look at, what did they engage with? What emails did they click on? What funnels did they go to? What split test versions of the funnels did they go to? And then we look at finding what is the most profitable path. And once we find that most profitable path, then and only then we can go, okay, that's where we want to go and put our focus. So that's how we found that after 30 days, then somebody got to day 4 was worth a lot more. So at that point, it was like building the automations out for that. So I wrote, and you have to take a step back, right? And you go, hey, if I was having a conversation with someone, how would I write? So we were writing it, hey, like, good morning, you're doing great, all these kind of things, right? And it was very, very conversational the way we're putting the name. We're writing some things that are maybe not grammatically correct as well. You know, we're not writing like we're writing an essay. We're writing in such a way that just people go, oh, this feels really nice. Now, and then we tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it and tweaked it and got feedback from the team who was supporting on that and the sales team. And then was like, hey, what's feeling natural? What's not feeling natural? And then we just kept refining it. And yeah, I think we went from, it was like 3-4x in the early days, and now it's leveled out. And we're still more than double what it was before. So now it means we can spend double the amount to acquire a customer and still make more money.
Is there a recipe to this that you can do time and time again? Does it differ per industry, or is this it? You found the formula and you've doubled down on it.
Yeah. So what one of the recipe part that I'd say remains the same is the lifetime customer value part. That is crucial, right, to the whole success of the whole process. So number one is understanding what is the most profitable path. And when we say profitable path, that's not just how much money do we make right now. How much money do we make from that path in 30, 60, 90, 180 days? So we're looking at that through the whole journey. Once we've identified what that is, then we can look at where we want to optimize in the sales process, whether that be adding in an accountability system, whether that be optimizing the on-funnel pages, whether that be optimizing the sales process, wherever it is along the buyer journey, where we can then get that customer interaction to increase the lifetime value. And then the great thing is, then we do things like surveys to the list, and then we look at how can we use a customer's language patterns in the marketing to then increase that lifetime customer value more. So for example, we'll do a survey and then we'll go, hey, like, you know, what is the reason that you bought? Like, very simple question, what made you want to buy? And then they'll tell you why they want to buy and say, because I wanted this and this and this. And you're like, great. So our best buyers are the ones who wanted this and this and this. And then you look at your sales pages and you go, do you know what? We're not really talking about that benefit. So I had a client recently that a lot of the copy was based around how much money you would make. But everyone in the survey was saying, I did it because it saved me time. So we were way off base, right? Because we hadn't surveyed the audience. So once we'd surveyed the audience, then it was like, oh, okay, that's the language patterns we need to use. And then we can pass that on to the sales team and they can start using those language patterns. We can pass it on to the media buyers. So this conversational commerce where we're having that human interaction and building a feedback loop that then generally then can create more sales at every stage of the buying journey.
Real quick, guys, are you an entrepreneur, a small business owner, a marketing director that's wearing way too many hats? You find yourself doing too many different types of jobs within the business and allocating your attention everywhere? There's a good chance if you're doing this, you're a jack of all trades, master of none. This is exactly why Merged Media exists. We're your one-stop digital shop, your outsourced CMO. We take care of all of those digital marketing tasks all under one roof, including Google Ads, search engine optimization, social media marketing, and website optimization. We're all collaborating together under one roof at Merged Media. And if you think there might be a good fit for us to work with you, I want you to go on over to merged.ca and book your discovery call today. That's merged.ca. So we've talked a lot about like the weeds of it. Just taking a step back, how would you go about conducting those surveys with customers?
Yeah, so I mean, I think this was a Ryan Levesque thing that it originally came up from. So the Do You Hate Me survey. And so when someone gets to the end of, you know, your abandoned cart sequence or whatever that is, if they haven't bought, then put them into a survey and find out why they didn't buy. Say, hey, do you hate me? And then it's like, I noticed, you know, you probably came into our world for a few different reasons. Here's the reasons that I think they are, or whatever that thing is. And then at the end of it, you're like, listen, I really appreciate your feedback. And we'll enter you to win a prize draw for something as well, just to give that extra incentive. So then people give you feedback and go, okay, that's why people are not buying. And then the other side is then the buyers. Well, something that we've been looking at recently more is like when you are looking at the buyer ones, don't just look at the buyers, look at the highest value buyers, because they're the ones you actually want, right? Going into the front end of the funnel is the highest value buyers. So if, let's say you're selling something for $27. Now there is value to surveying those people. However, if you've got then a $5,000 backend and you're surveying those people, which one of those results would you rather take the information from and the language patterns from and put on your $27 landing page? The $27 buyers or the $5,000 buyers? So that's how we break it down then and just go, right, what is the most profitable path? There was an analogy, I can't remember where, I'd love to credit the person, but I can't remember where I got it from. So planes in the World War, when they came back, they had bullet holes in them. And a lot of the time, they started off by going, right, we need to make the plane stronger where all those bullet holes were. Okay. Most people would think that would be a logical thing to do because maybe that's why the plane crashed. No, it's the opposite, right? The ones that came back had bullet holes in them, but the ones that didn't come back, that was they shot them in the places where they weren't the bullet holes. So it's about thinking from a survey perspective, hey, like, am I asking the main buyers or am I just asking the most profitable buyers? And we think about that across the whole customer journey. It's like, where is the biggest needle movers?
That is so good. That's and that appeals to a lot of different avenues of digital marketing. You know, a lot of people optimize for clicks on Facebook, for example. Well, you're going to get people that like to click on content, but might not necessarily convert on content. So it's really like narrowing the scope on and being smart about who you're putting your ads in front of, who you're targeting, and who you want to get your message in front of, right?
Yeah, yeah, 100%. I mean, that's what we talk about, like when we're working with media buyers and the sales teams and being that conversion glue in the middle. We want to make sure we're all looking at the same metrics, because what you find a lot of the time, especially with seven-figure to eight-figure businesses, a business has gone from being this small scale, right, where the owner-operator is really running the whole show. And then they're like, hey, if I'm looking at this metric, everyone else is looking at this metric because they're dictating it. However, then as you start to grow and you get to that six, seven and eight figure level, then you've got departments and all the departments, and you've got outside suppliers, you might have an outsourced sales team and so on and so forth. All those departments are looking at different metrics, and then they're basing their decisions based on different metrics. So one of the first things we have to do when we go into business a lot of the time is go, hey, here's the metrics. Here's what we're looking at. Can we all agree that this is the best metric to look at? And then usually that metric is, hey, what's the ROAS on the back end sales? Because that's the important one. Like, I wouldn't care really if I got 10 cents back on every dollar that was spent on the front end. So if it cost me $200 to get a $20 buyer, but I knew in 30 days that buyer would turn into a $5,000 buyer, I would do that all day long, right? So the front end thing, yes, you want to optimize it, and yes, you want to get it as close to break even and so on. However, it's the back end that is the real winner, and that's what gives you the real sales.
I love it. That's awesome. So we've talked, like I said, we talked a lot about the weeds, but I want to talk about a bit about the tools that you're using in order to generate these kind of results. Is it like a ManyChat messenger type of thing? Like what are you using?
Yeah, so we used to use ManyChat a lot, and then Europe came along with lots of rules. So we started to move away from that a little bit more, and we still use it occasionally, but we looked at what was the psychology behind that, and then how can we use it on text messages and do the same kind of two-way SMS process, right? Because if you think about a lot of SMSs, they're a one-way process, all right? So it's just people sending you text blast saying this event's starting, or get this coupon, or those kind of things. So we're like, how can we actually build rapport and create those hand raises for people to go, do you know what? Yeah, I'm interested in that thing. So ManyChat is, you know, one thing that we've used in the past. Segmetrics is something that we use a lot. We've just been diving into Hyros more as well for ads tracking. And then you've got things like Hotjar for visitor recording tracking. And then funnel builders, it's really anything that can do A/B split testing. And making sure we can test as many things as possible, because like that's the key to everything. So some clients we've got using ClickFunnels, some clients we've got using something called QuickConvert, we've got some clients using Unbounce, Entreport. This is like just loads of different things out there. So it's more about, you know, we can talk about tactics or we can talk about strategy, and the strategy behind it remains the same no matter what platform you use, as long as they've got the tools embedded in to work with.
Awesome. Is there a preference in terms of the traffic generation platform where you see people coming into your ecosystem, you know, via Facebook, email? What's your, do you have any preference on that side of the fence?
Yeah, so Facebook and YouTube are two of the core, right, that get used a lot. We're also, we've got some clients experimenting. They're just starting to, on like Pinterest, TikTok, like even some LinkedIn ads and stuff like that. And it also depends, you know, where your buyer is. So if you're going, potentially for an older audience, right, maybe like going towards retirement or things like that, then it might be YouTube that works a lot better for you. It might be Google Ads. If you're going to like maybe a 20s audience, right, or early 30s, then it might be Facebook. If you're going for a younger audience, it could be TikTok. But even TikTok's getting a lot wider and wider adoption now as well, and it seems to be the place to be, and everything's a place to be, why it is the place to be, right? And then another 12 months down the line, it'll be something else and something else and something else. So it's about looking, speaking in your buyer's language based on that particular platform as well, right? So for example, Facebook, it might be more of a, for example, you might sell a free book, more so free book, get that low ticket buyer and then guide them into being a high ticket buyer. YouTube, you might go more straight to a webinar and then to a back-end sales call. It's about looking at like what is the cost to acquire a customer, but also trying all these different things until you find, hey, that's the most profitable path, and then honing in on that and optimizing the hell out of it.
So let's talk about the future of conversational commerce for a second. Mm-hmm. You know, people are becoming savvier. You know, there's a lot of noise out there in the digital marketing landscape. With that being said, where do you see conversational commerce going? Do you think people are going to be numb to bots? Do they really crave that human interaction, or is it just going to be almost like undisguisable? Like you're never going to know whether it's a bot or a person.
So I think human touch is becoming more and more important than ever, right? We've never been more connected and we've never been more disconnected. Because, you know, you look at everything else that's gone on in the last few years, especially the last couple of years, it's been a big shift in the way people buy, the way people communicate with each other, and all those kind of things. So people love that human element, and we've tried to go 100% automated before. Let's automate the whole process. Every time we've done that, it's not worked as well as putting the human element into it. So I think there's always a place for AI and there's always a place for automation. And automation, if you see that as a tool to solve the grunt work, right? The low level tasks at the front. Like for example, if you wanted to reach out to everyone and ask them a question, great, use a bot to do that. But then when you're looking at the replies, maybe the first reply might still be automated. But after that, if you hand over to humans, you're going to get a lot better conversion rate. Because everyone's got their own, when people respond, AI is only taken into account a certain amount of time. Now, there may come a point where that becomes so smart that, you know what, it can literally run the whole thing better than a human can. Right now, the way I've seen it in terms of using like Dialogflow or any these other AI tools and stuff, it's smart, but it's only smart based on the data that's inputted to it. So it's not always looking at the full scope of the picture. So let me just give you an example of that. Let's say it's like, hey, would you be interested in product, right? And someone says, yes, I would. But right now, my husband just died, right? Extreme example. Now, if you've got a bot that's recognizing sentiment, it may recognize that, yes, I would. And then what do you reply with? That sounds great. To someone whose husband's just died, right? So there's a time and a place where AI works. And it's also, this is when you're talking about, hey, how do you actually think about how this works out? You've always got to think of future pacing of going, well, what if, like what potential situations could come up? And how can I make sure that doesn't come up in that situation? So luckily I did the Strength Finder test, if anyone's ever done it. It's Tom Rath's Strength Finder Test 2.0. My number one strength is futuristic. So it means I get to look forward and go, okay, well, what could come up and how's it going to happen? And then strategic is also in that top five. So I'm a lucky, lucky boy.
That's pretty good. And it makes total sense in terms of the industry that you're in and the direction that you've gone. I think my number one was Woo with the Strength Finder.
Woo.
Which makes, I think that makes podcasting a pretty good one for myself. So yeah, Woo is one of them. I was kind of shocked. I'm like, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's not a great thing, but I'll live with it, I guess. So
I love it.
So how are you marketing Amplify CCOM? Where are you investing your marketing budget or even time?
Yeah, so the way I made a conscious decision probably around 12 months ago. I read a book called Small Giants. So it's by Bo Burlingham. And that book is based on you serve a small number of clients and you serve them at a very high level, right? Or you serve a small number of customers, not necessarily clients, right? It could be you could have a luxury retail outlet that maybe, I don't know, you sell luxury cruise liners and you might only have four or five clients. So we looked in the same way where it's like, how can we deliver so much value to our current clients and build up a business in a way where we can grow with them? So we only win when they win. So we have a one-time launch deposit, and I won't go into the amounts on that because it may change over time as well. But we have a one-time launch deposit, and then we work on a profit share basis. So the client keeps the majority, and we get a cut of helping them grow their business. So that means then we become more like partners in the business. So we're very, very particular about who we bring on. So in terms of marketing, when I was first starting out, you know, it was more of a, hey, I'll just take anything that'll come. And then we slowly raised the rates and stuff like that. And then we moved to this profit share model. And I will say out the gate, I didn't always take on the right clients in order to make that profitable, because you don't know what you don't know. However, now the way that we've set up a business, we have it in a way we've got four clients right now, and then we will take on no more than one client a month at the moment, because we know to serve those people at the highest level, that's how it needs to happen. And then the only way that we take on clients is through referral. So, you know, we will go to a maximum of 10, but I also need to make sure every time I take on a client, I put new infrastructure in place, because we're essentially acting almost like a CMO, right? For each business. So imagine being a CMO of four businesses. That takes up quite a lot of bandwidth when you're writing the emails, the SMS, doing the funnels, doing the integrations, doing the KPIs, everything. When you do all those things together, then it does take up a lot of bandwidth. So you have to be very selective about who you take on and make sure it's a perfect fit client. So that's really how we market, which sounds a little bit counterintuitive. It's like, well, why would you do this podcast and stuff? Well, number one, I want to give as much value to the world as possible. Help enough people get what they want, you will get what you want. And then secondly, hey, like the time may come when we can then refer you to someone else. So I'm all about being a hub. That's why we do our own podcast. That's why you have a podcast as well, Jay, right? It's to create yourself as a hub and have this network of people that you can rely upon, build and grow upon. So for me, I get to meet amazing people like yourself and then speak to your audience and give value to them. So it may seem a bit counterintuitive, but that's why we do it the way we do it.
Paul, this has been awesome. Great conversation. If our audience has any questions for you, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
So go ahead and go over to www.amplifycom.com. No hyphens in it or anything. So that's amplifycom.com. And there's some free resources on there. We've got three or four free resources and loads of other stuff. And you can see, you can book a call if you want to work with us, and we can see if it is a good fit.
You guys can go and check out the links in the show notes of this episode. Again, it's episode 118, merge.ca/podcast/118. Now, Paul, we end every episode with the same question. That question is this: if you could choose one person, dead or alive, to represent your brand, who would it be and why?
So, oh, wow. That's a question worth thinking about, isn't it? Keith Cunningham.
Who's that?
Right, Keith Cunningham is a guy who wrote the book Road Less Stupid. And he's all about don't pay dumb tax, right? So if you were to take the three biggest mistakes that you've made in your life and reduce and get rid of those completely, just think about how much more money you would have and how much more time you would have. So he's a super, super, super smart guy. And if he was representing our brand, I know he would have the strategic things in place for it to massively grow.
Awesome. That sounds like a topic for another chat. So maybe we'll have you on, Paul, again sometime in the future. But thanks again for joining us today, Paul. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Jay. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Merged Marketing Podcast. I truly appreciate it and would love it if you went over to your podcast platform and gave us a subscribe so you never miss an episode. Also, if you think the Merged Marketing Podcast is a good fit for somebody else, like your business partner or your spouse, just go on over and give this episode a share. I'd love it if you would share the wealth of knowledge and value that I'm bringing to you and share it to other people. That would be amazing. Again, thank you so much for listening. Don't settle for good. Be great. We'll see you soon.